Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
We are back with an all-new episode of DirtCast. Yay. I am your co-host, Madeline Davies.
I am your other co-host, Megan Reynolds.
Joining us in the studio at this very second is our very own Jezebel senior writer, Ellie Sheckett.
Hello!
Yay!
It's going to be a pretty good show.
I think so.
Yeah.
I know we talk about reality TV a lot.
We do.
But we're going to keep doing that.
Yeah, we're just going to not stop. I hope that's okay.
You can't pick your passions, guys.
That's true.
But today we're going to be kind of diving into forgotten Bravo shows or maybe overlooked Bravo shows.
Right. Mm.
And we have a very special guest in the second half of the episode.
We do.
Which is an actual gallery girl, Angela Pham.
There's something that the camera does that makes you just act like an idiot.
So I kind of want to just get right in. I feel like when we like say like the dirtiest dirt, all Bravo shows are just dirty dirt.
All Bravo shows are pretty dirty.
First, I want to say like, okay, I think like the A-list of Bravo shows are your Real Housewives.
Sure, sure.
Top Chef.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Southern Charm is creeping in.
It is. It's getting in there. Well, Vanderpump Rules, I think right now, after the Rihanna Instagram.
Yeah.
Vanderpump Rules really skyrocketed to the top, I
Vanderpump
would say.
Rules is also just the best TV show
it
on
is.
Television.
It's so.
True. no doubt about that. Yeah, and then you kind of have these shows that sort of appear and then disappear.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're there for like 1 to 2 seasons if they're lucky. I feel like they always pop up in the summer, but I don't know if that's true. I think that's just when I become aware of them because I've exhausted
my coffers
are empty and I must find something to watch while I'm cooking dinner.
What are some of the ones that you guys visit or revisit?
Well, my favorites are Kel on Earth.
Oh my
yes,
God.
The Kelly Catrone.
I fucking love Kel on Earth.
I have a rule that there's no crying in the office. If you have to cry, go outside. Okay? And if you're sensitive and somebody hurts your feelings, I don't give a this is not group therapy, so get over it.
I really enjoyed NYC Prep.
Madeline, how are you?
Tonight I have a date with this girl, Daniela, who's like this really hot girl that I met at a party.
NYC Prep is like a really...
It holds up, guys.
It's like a very important show to me.
And then Tabitha's Salon Takeover.
You double dip, come and get your balls waxed and then have someone else's pubic hair all over them. That's lovely. That's revolting. And that's what you sell to clients?
Those are my three sort of lesser. I mean, I'd been saying like second tier Bravo shows, which feels rude to their legacy.
It's second tier and just in that it hasn't achieved the popularity and success where
right.
It's like, we're not saying the quality of these shows are second
right.
tier.
I mean, sometimes the quality is very visibly second tier,
yes.
like the production quality.
That's
it's
true.
Clearly not.
They didn't really have the budget to
right.
do
right.
what they could in other venues. Those are my top three. Those are shows that I think about at least once every 2 months.
Yeah. Mm. Ellie, got anything to throw into the...
I sure do. I mean, I wrote Kel on Earth in all caps with a bunch of exclamation points in my notes. I just found it to be, like, such a horrific show, where, like, with this woman who was just, like, I don't know, I feel like there was a time in the early aughts when it was completely acceptable to be, like, a high-powered New York woman who was, like, totally abusive towards
yes.
her staff, especially in the fashion world. Like, people loved that.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of runs with, like, when Devil Wears Prada came out and
totally. Yeah. The women who worked for her had these, like, gray faces.
Yeah. They always looked very, like, I felt for all of them deeply.
Yeah. Let's see. I think, as again, NYC Prep, a big, longtime favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw in Princesses Long Island. I always called it Long Island Princesses.
Oh, it's not called Long Island Princesses?
This is the big mystery about this show, is that it is technically – Princesses, colon, Long Island, as though Bravo thought that they were going to do a bunch of different shows about princesses.
Like the start of a franchise.
It's sort of like the franchise version of like Dress for the Job You Want.
That's really funny.
But this was the only one they did. I love that show because, well, for so many reasons. It's so awful. It was sort of this horrible image of Jewish people, of people in Long Island. There's this long Bravo tradition of just sort of offending the local townspeople, and that was a big, like a big part of that
it's
show
a big entry
was how
in that,
angry
yeah.
Long Island was about it.
Guess what I have, Manischewitz!
I mean, what I'll say is Bravo did not create the Long Island stereotype.
That is true.
They you know who did? Long Island.
Yeah.
Remind me again, I have a vague memory of watching like five episodes of this of that show were that were on demand like one Thanksgiving at my dad's house, and he was like, why are you guys watching this? And we were like, we can't stop. I'm so sorry. However, the details of it, give me just a general overview of what we could call a plot.
So basically it was a bunch of women who didn't really have jobs.
Yes.
So, a few of them did, I think, but mostly it was like there was a girl, Erica Gimbel, who like lived in her parents' mansion and just like had pool parties at her parents' house as like a 29-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like chill with that. There was this girl named Amanda,
mm-hmm,
who was 26 and dating this disgusting like 40-year-old man. And she started a business called Drink Hanky. And it's just cozies. It's like little different brightly colored cozies for your drink.
Oh, my God. What a brilliant idea.
Guess what, guys? Drink Hanky still exists.
I'm glad she's found a measure of success, whatever you want to call it.
Drink Hankies is an insane
it's
concept
iconic.
Name. It's like instantly iconic. It's really, wow.
Yeah, so the plot, I think, was mostly just like, a bunch of them wanted to get married. Them being single and, like, creeping into their 30s was a really big plot point and, a big problem.
My baby sister, who's 24 years old, is getting married. And I'd be happier for her if I wasn't 4 years older, still single, and being called an old maid.
First of all, I want to say l'chaim to both of you. You have a beautiful future together, and we wish you only happiness. Well. And you will hopefully meet your soulmate.
It was not like a feminist show per se.
No.
But yeah, I mean, I think that show didn't really have a plot. It was just sort of like a lot of these Bravo shows, just people sort of milling around.
I love to watch people aimlessly mill in some sort
enforced
of like
conversation.
Enforced conversation on like the patio of like an Italian restaurant at like an upscale strip mall. Which is where I feel most of these things happen.
I feel like I would also be remiss if I did not mention Ladies of London, which is recently lost that show.
You can't keep everybody happy all the time. It's impossible. And we all are very open, honest, happy people. And we do speak our minds sometimes.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I've got to interrupt you. But what I've learned in the last couple of years is loyalty. I'm sorry.
I agree.
I am sorry with this group of people. I've never seen loyalty last a fleeting second.
That ran a few seasons.
It ran a few seasons. It was weird to me because it was far and away one of the best programs on television, but it was treated by Bravo like a second-tier Bravo show, which I never understood.
Right.
I follow so many of them just like on Instagram.
I do too.
Because they're much more interesting.
I mean, one of them literally just moved to Dubai for no reason, and now she just sort of like swans around.
Yeah.
Wow.
At the pool.
That sounds like a good
in Dubai.
Luck. Just like
it doesn't sound like a good.
I don't know. I could do it for 3 months. And
she
then
just like flies her
there.
Hairdresser out to like hang out with her.
Okay, that's a little empty.
And she
it's
her makeup artist.
Yeah.
And she shares this makeup artist with Dorinda from Real Houses of New York.
And this makeup artist really like smears orange all over her entire body. It's incredible to
watch. Caroline Stanbury.
Caroline Stanbury is one of the cast members on Ladies of London, RIP.
It's also, I will say, one of, I think, two shows on Bravo that, like, had a suicide as a part of, like, a thing.
Oh.
Although you can't really blame Bravo for that one.
It's unclear, like, how related.
What happened?
Well, so this guy, one of the, like, first season cast members who didn't return after this happened, was dating an older man who was in the middle of, like, the most expensive divorce in Britain.
Yeah, okay. It was, like, a huge tabloid thing. Yeah.
And he jumped off the roof.
Ooh.
It had a lot to do with, like, financial.
Like, okay.
It was, like, he was really in debt. Like, I don't think it was, like, the focus of the show. I think it was just, like, British tabloid culture.
I see.
Right, yeah. The first season of that show was so much about British tabloid culture.
Oh, yeah, Caprice.
Caprice.
Is there any way to watch this program?
Yes, I own all of the seasons on iTunes. So.
I think I do, too.
Okay, great.
If we're being honest.
I have two sources. Perfect.
I bought it for a flight. I was like, I have a really long flight.
That's a brilliant
idea. And so I was like,
I'm just
going to knock out Ladies of London.
It's so weird how famous these people actually are. Because when you watch the reality shows, it's like very small potatoes. technically, they're like D-listers, I guess.
Right.
But like everyone knows who they are.
Again, Rihanna is posting Instagrams about Vanderpump Rules.
That's amazing. What was the instant that she was Instagramming? Lala drinking out of the baby bottle?
No, it was something. It was Tom Schwartz. Waking up post-Mexico.
Yeah,
binge.
Remembering his like drinking the night before.
Beau, what are you doing?
Huh? Technically, I'm going golfing. And right now, I'm brushing my teeth, but, like, on a deeper level, I have no clue. Last night, it was, like, it's a blur. I remember bits and pieces, like, I remember, you know, tequila shots, lots of tequila shots. I remember James shirtless. I remember, like, penis flutes. Dancing. And kissing. And then, yeah, from there, it just sort of, I don't know what happened after that.
It was a really good moment.
Oh, my God.
I also loved NYC Prep, which, for people who don't know, was pitched sort of as a real-life Gossip Girl.
So it was about
Upper East Side teens at, like, a private school. Or I guess it was just about a private school. They came from all over. It definitely, like, destroyed all of these kids' lives.
100%.
One of the girls was, like, her story was she was sort of the little J of the group. She was a poor from Brooklyn.
Taylor
was the, like, poor one who went to public school, I think, even though she went to, like, a really good school.
She went to Stuyvesant.
She's,
like, an excellent public school in New York.
But it was, like, her plot was, like, she was, like, wanted to be friends with the rich kids.
Right.
So Rachel Withers, who is our new intern, paid.
Okay. Let's forge ahead here.
Yeah.
Who's our...
let's keep it moving.
She is amazing and, like, put together this whole thing about, like, where they could be now because some of them disappeared off the face of the earth.
Possibly made efforts to scrub themselves from.
I got Sebastian on Bumble once.
I know that he's on Bumble, right?
Tight.
Did he have his, like, hair flip?
Was there a scarf involved?
Yes, he had the exact same hair, in fact.
Of course.
I love that, like, the reason he was so hot was because he spoke French.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He spoke, like, three words of French.
And all the girls were like, yeah.
Are you into seafood? Into that?
Kind of. Tart flambé. Does that mean it's, like, on fire?
Yeah. Flambé.
Oh, excuse me. Wait, are you, like, actually French?
Oui.
Someone on Reddit 7 months ago posted, and this is, like, no way in hell this is true.
Right.
Posted,
but it's incredible.
I just love it. I don't love it as a story, but it's just, like, a funny thing to make up. I saw Taylor from NYC Prep begging for money on the subway the other day. It was actually shocking and pretty scary. I knew it was her right away because I knew her before the show. Poor girl. Hope she gets the help she needs.
What?
But some, like, we, like, yeah. But then Rachel, like, I'm not going to give it away, but Rachel actually found out where she is and she is not begging for money
on
the subway.
No, I mean, also in this note, it also says there's a rumor that she was heavily involved with the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Which, all right, girl.
Which
you swung
is, like,
the other way.
I'm loving
she was like the Wall Street side. Yeah.
I'm loving that twist for her. If that is indeed what happened.
So Richard Lawson for Gawker used to write these amazing NYC prep recaps, and he would only refer to Taylor as Rags McTatter Shanties. And so that's what I think of when I think of her.
I'm trying to think who else.
PC just got married in Vegas to his best friend.
Tiffany Trump was there. Trump was there. Big deal. It was very confusing. It was a platonic.
Yeah, they're not in a romantic relationship.
Okay, sure. I don't know. PC was like sort of trying to be the.
He like wanted to be Chuck Bass.
Yeah, he was like had this weird swaggering thing about him that was very off-putting. There was also Camille, who was literally expelled from her fancy private school because she was on the show.
I know.
And her whole plot line was about getting into Harvard, and she did not get into Harvard.
No.
I also just love, like, the charity work.
Operation Smile?
It was, like, all these kids pretending to care about cleft palates.
That's right, because of
Jessie. For their college application.
Yeah, it was Jessie's charity, but she like, picked that one because it was Jessica Simpson's charity.
Yeah.
And I love when there are new members, but I'm skeptical about meeting Camille because some people join because they just want to socialize or they think it will look good for college.
I felt bad for Jessie. I can't remember why I felt bad for Jessie, but looking at these names again, the one feeling that is bubbling up is like, I felt bad for Jessie, but I can't remember. I don't know why.
Jessie is still working in fashion and merchandising. Then she is living her dream.
Then I do not feel bad for Jessie.
She was one of those girls who's always like busy, like working on something. Yes. Like, oh, I'm so stressed. I have so much going on.
She's like 16. 15. Yeah. Right.
I also love that she was the queen bee, but was so disinteresting and didn't exude power in any way.
I mean, it was a really interesting reality show in that none of them had any personal charisma whatsoever, which is actually kind of rare now. Like, you won't see duds like this on television anymore.
I've seen PC on the street multiple times.
Really?
And like because every time my first reaction, which is I feel like your reaction with all of these people is, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Because you, like, kind of do know them.
Right.
And then I, like, every time I'm like, oh, it's fucking PC.
That's really funny.
And then whoever I'm meeting, I'm like, I just saw PC. And they say, who? And then I have to explain it. And they don't care.
I just want to draw light attention to PC's marriage, which we discussed briefly. But this is a quote from his new wife from Instagram. P.S. We have never had sex. It's pure friendship. And then PC also said that they've never been involved romantically and that they would still date other people, but they're married. He said, Esme and I have taken a progressive step towards what we believe marriage should be. I need to be constantly evolving, growing, and progressing. This is something I apply to every part of my life. We did this because we wanted to finalize our commitment to each other as life partners and best friends. Life is short, and I just want to be happy.
Imagine taking yourself that seriously.
I can't.
Not to, like, you know, shit on her parade, but...
Yeah.
Does it shock you...
No.
...that PC has a wife that he doesn't have sex with?
No.
No.
No. No.
A female wife?
A female wife. No, that does... I am not surprised.
I just really liked the page 6 write-up of this was great because there were just all these great details. One line that stuck with me was the dumbfounded Secret Service looking on.
Oh, because Tiffany Trump was there.
Because Tiffany Trump was there.
And I'm like, God, what does Tiffany, like, what's it like to be Tiffany Trump's Secret Service guy?
I don't know, man.
Do you think you're just, like, playing Snake on your phone a lot?
Yeah,
you're
probably
playing, like, Candy Crush and just sort of, like, looking up every now and then. Like,
oh, she's still doing that? Okay.
Yeah, like, oh, you still Tiff? Okay, cool. Back to the thing.
Can I talk about another, what I feel very underrated Bravo show was, which was Work of Art. It was produced by Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, yeah.
And had Jerry Saltz as a judge.
Oh, my God.
I remember this.
One of the stars of the show was Luann Deliceppe's downtown niece, Nicole.
Nicole, who I follow on Instagram.
She actually was like very pleasant and down to earth.
Weird.
In this circumstance.
That's nice.
And then there was this other kid who was super in love with her named Miles. And he was this like very like sleepy art school boy who was like very hot, but clearly just like such a shit.
This whole piece for me was about setting up the most uncomfortable environment for me to try and fall asleep in. It's just been an issue with me since I've been in the competition where I've been sleeping so poorly.
I got to know about you, the artist, and about artists in general, I liked that you activated the sculpture with your own body.
Part of the performance aspect of this was my awareness of the kind of sensual nature of watching someone sleep.
I would say it goes beyond that. I would say that the butthole and all of the signifiers in this piece are all about this sense of the body.
Mm. And one time their assignment was to make a piece of controversial art, which is how controversial art happens.
Someone says, do something. Yes.
And basically
exactly
they like had to like look at the piss Christ and then you're like, how are you going to do this? And they were all so bad and so ham-fisted. But Miles made a Mickey Mouse head made out of, like, tiny pornographic illustrations, but together it made up the Mickey Mouse head. And then he took it into a bathroom and came on it.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, he's like, it really needed something extra. So it shows him just like taking his drawing into a closet and then it closed the door. And then you like see it later and you're like, yeah, that really added it. Oh, now it's good.
That's right up Jerry Saltz's alley, though.
Yeah.
I think he hated it.
I'm shocked. I'm honestly shocked.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I would like to pivot the conversation to some of the current programming on Bravo, specifically a little show called Southern Charm.
My buddy.
That theme song is so good.
It's so jaunty.
Yeah, it's really, really just like, wow.
So Southern Charm, for those of you who are not watching yet, is a reality show based in Charleston. And it's this group of mostly wealthy white people who
you're right.
It's a strangely wide array of different ages. There's one of the stars of the show is like 300 years old.
She like does all of her scenes from a bed surrounded by dogs.
Yeah.
Patricia Altschul,
who has recently put out a line of dog caftans.
Wait, with four dogs?
No, for you. But you can put your dog's face on a caftan or a pillow.
She's the one responsible for that?
Yeah, yes. It's weird. Bravo has like its fair share of like older ladies who are obsessed with dogs.
Yeah.
Would she put a cat on one? Can I get a cat?
A cat tan?
I feel like probably not.
That's so rude.
There are a lot of reasons why this show is good, and one of them is that it has weird characters like Patricia, who is a very wealthy art collector and philanthropist who lives in, like, an antebellum mansion.
Oh, my God.
Has a butler and wears, like, designer floaty caftans.
What I do when I entertain at home is that I love to wear caftans. They're comfortable. It's like wearing your nightgown. It's monkeys in space, and it's fun.
Isn't she bedridden? Does she stand up?
She's not actually bedridden. Oh, okay. She just has a lot of scenes from bed.
Gotcha.
She's always drinking like a martini.
Wow.
She's got a very specific thing going on.
It's very like Tennessee Williams.
I see. Okay.
So there are a lot of terrible men on this show, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
There are some women that are very compelling. And, like, just to say at the outset, this, like most reality shows, this is kind of when you watch Southern Charm, you start to like people who technically do not share your values.
Yeah,
right.
There's sort of like, it's this very fun, bright, easy reality show, but there's a lot of like really dark shit happening also.
Yes.
In the first season, a 50-year-old impregnated a 21-year-old twice.
Twice?
Well, she had a baby, and then he knocked her up again.
Which one is it? Is it Catherine?
Thomas Ravenaugh, who is a disgraced state congressman who got thrown out of office for cocaine possession.
Yeah, he was indicted for cocaine. For cocaine, I think, distribution.
Yeah.
Well, and then the first season, he's trying to run again.
I'm Thomas Ravenaugh, and I approve this message. Lindsey Graham's broken your trust by backing both Barack Obama's radical Supreme Court justices.
And there's actually a lot of very satisfying scenes where people are like, I will never vote for you.
Right. And he comes from, like, an old family. Like, his father, there's a bridge named after him. His father was in government for a while, right?
Yeah, well, his father was a state senator congressman, and the Ravenaughs are very, like, old South in like, a creepy way.
Yeah.
He's got these, like, empty eyes.
Oh, my God.
And this horrible laugh.
He's also a raging alcoholic.
You're less than me. No. You're less.
No, I'm not going to sit here.
Sanctimonious bitch, get out of here.
Thomas.
You got to leave. Thomas, I didn't want to invite you to begin with.
He's out of his goddamn mind.
And is facing two separate allegations of sexual assault and rape. So one of the things that's happening—
I figured we were building to that.
Yeah.
we're getting there, yeah.
One of the things that's happened on this show recently, and Bravo hasn't, like, officially commented on any of it yet, but he has reportedly or allegedly been fired from the show.
Okay.
People won't film with him, apparently.
Yeah, he's, like, not invited to the reunion.
Yeah. Because there are, like, multiple investigations happening.
Also, like, the mother of his children is a very troubled woman who has dealt with a lot of substance abuse issues. She has come out the other side.
Yeah, I mean, she seems okay now. I think it's really, like, she was literally a child when—
Well, no.
I mean, not literally. She was 21, but she was very young.
And people were like, she's fucking crazy. And it's like, no, we're talking about Catherine Calhoun Dennis.
Oh, yes. Okay. And that's the other awful thing about Thomas is that he says things that are like, well, you're incredibly racist, aren't you? He would always talk about Catherine's good name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Catherine is a descendant of John C. Calhoun, who was a big defender of slavery.
Yeah.
Big, super into slavery.
I think that's
slavery.
Probably true for most of those people.
Yeah. Well, no, he was, like, the guy that was, like, the most into slavery. He was, like, super, more into slavery than everybody else.
Everyone was like, hey, you're really into slavery, bud. Yeah, that was, wow.
There are also some women on the show that I want to talk about because they're so interesting.
Yes, please.
Can we start with Cameron?
I like Cameron so far.
who was on Real World San Diego.
That's right.
When she was 19.
Yes.
That's right.
She's now a real estate agent.
Good.
She is, like, sort of the central figure in the show and kind of the narrator.
I love her narration.
It's almost like I'm just kind of getting sick of myself. I feel like I'm too self-involved. I don't want to be that self-involved because it's gross.
I also recently found out that she voted for Gary Johnson, which sort of fucked me up for a minute.
Did you think she was a Democrat?
I wanted to hope.
I mean, yeah. It's nice to have hope. I appreciate that.
There's also Chelsea, who Cameron calls Chelsea, and she was on Survivor.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Wow, wow, wow. Love it.
My name is Chelsea. I'm 26, and I'm a medical sales rep in Charleston.
Chelsea is made for this game. She is fit. She comes from a country background. She can shoot a gun.
She's also, like, very comfortable being single in her early 30s, which is, like, a totally normal thing, but also not something that is normally portrayed on reality TV, I think.
Right.
So that's an interesting dynamic.
One of the more recent episodes kind of was a tipping point in the Ravenaugh story.
Oh.
In that his new girlfriend, Ashley, is about as insane as he is. And there's all of these stories about them, like, launching secret harassment campaigns against other cast members.
What? Mm-hmm.
Everybody hates her, like, more than they hate Thomas, which feels almost unfair.
So Ashley basically It's almost like she studied like every reality television show villain and just decided to make herself like a composite of that.
That's
and then turn it up 10 points. There's a moment where she screams at Catherine and tells her she's a bad mother and says all this like kind of defamatory stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I see those children more than you see them.
You don't see how they come back after the weekend with you? I see it.
And tell me about it.
This is what I hear from the nanny.
Tell her the nanny.
The teacher, the one that you fired.
Yeah.
Catherine does not have custody of those children.
Right.
Thomas does because of Catherine's substance abuse issues. She went to rehab. She, like, sought treatment. She's doing really well, okay. It seems. But in the meantime, her son was in the hospital for something, mm-hmm. and she, like, wasn't allowed to come see him. And that's one of the things that Ashley says. She's like, well, how many times do you visit your son in the hospital?
Oh, God. And that's awful.
But it's, like, kind of an amazing – because Catherine was kind of everybody's villain for so long, it was sort of amazing to watch them, like, rally around her.
I just felt sick to my stomach.
What she said was disgusting. I mean, we'll
terrible,
just...
Yeah. Terrible. Like, their kids are going to see that one day.
One of the guys, Shep Rose, is like the nicest golden retriever man of all time.
His teeth frighten me very much.
I would bang the hell out of him.
I'd also have sex with Shep, and I'm like,
he would be bad at it.
I would meet Shep in some dark bar and be really upset at myself, but I'd definitely have sex with him.
I think he's secretly a sociopath, but
I'd still hit it.
He's like a very nice person who kind of gets along with everybody.
Nice. Very and dumb.
Even said, he's like, I've never said this about anybody, but I don't like Ashley. And everyone's like,
I hate her. Yeah, the funny thing about the show is that whenever there's a fight, there's always a couple people, like, off to the side being like, it's not my place to intervene.
that's actually not a thing. That's incredible. I love that. That's really nice.
I don't know. One of the women's ex-boyfriends was like, should I get it? No, she's handling it.
Whitney also?
Oh.
Whitney is Patricia's.
I have a story about Whitney.
Whitney is Patricia's son.
Oh, that's okay. Okay.
Yeah, Whitney's also a producer on the show.
Oh, hello.
I think the show was partially his creation. I saw Whitney
in
LA.
Oh.
So here's what happened.
Please.
I was at Soho House with Kara Brown, our departed colleague.
That's where Jezebel employees always hang out.
It's Soho House. Yeah,
it was super casual. I go there all the time.
I love it there. Okay.
He was across the room. His back, like he was like several hundred feet away from me. His back was to me. He doesn't have like a super memorable head or body or any, there's nothing like memorable about Whitney except for that it looks like he's had a facelift.
Yes, it does.
But I recognized him from really far away from behind and sped across the room to get closer and followed him to the bathroom.
Oh my God.
Where he turned around and I casually also turned around and walked away. But I've never been so right about anything in my life, and I was really excited.
I wish I had seen that.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah,
I would say a really cool.
It was a cool personal moment for you.
Cool personal moment for me. Something definitely to brag about on a podcast.
I also think we need to like make it very clear. T-Rav Thomas is like not a funny character.
No, he's reprehensible.
He's an actual bad person.
He's really gross and awful. And it's for most of the show, they treat him like, oh, it's just T-Rav.
Yeah, he's just like a drunk clown.
Yeah.
But
he once got drunk and fell into the pool while holding his infant daughter.
What? Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. And again, I always have felt like the whole thing with Catherine where it was like, she's the crazy one. And it's like, no, she's 20.
Mm.
And you are over twice her age and are disgusting.
Right.
My mom wants to make it very clear that Shep is a liberal. She loves him. She's always like, because I think
Shep voted for Gary Johnson also.
Dang. What she said to me is she's like, oh, he's always tweeting anti-Trump stuff.
I mean, I don't think he likes Trump. I think like several of them are very anti-Trump, but I don't think they're liberal.
All right. You can tell my mom that.
There's a tension this season also between the men and the women, I think.
Oh, interesting.
There's, like, a lot of talk about the good old boys and their system that, like, keeps them from facing consequences.
Oh,
wow, that show and Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah.
Yikes.
It's interesting.
They were, like, outwardly racist.
If they are, and I'm sure that some of them are, yeah, they edit it out. It's not, like, they don't talk about politics on the show.
Okay.
Except for when Thomas ran for the Senate.
Sure.
There are just, like, little things where it's sort of clear
offhand
that
things.
It's like dog whistle racism.
Yeah.
Okay. That's because that's what I've gotten from watching literally just the first, like, three episodes.
Yeah, I think Patricia, I was just reading, owns Robert E. Lee's bed.
Ew.
In her house.
Jesus Christ.
Which is like, why would you ever want that in your house?
The cursed item.
It's very, like, you can tell that all of them are people who, like, if confronted with their own biases, would be like, I don't know, I love everybody. I, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
It's like our housekeeper's like a member of the family.
Yeah.
That right. type of thing.
Totally. I feel like having grown up in Kentucky around a lot of really rich white Southern people, I feel like part of what I like about this show is watching it. It's sort of like an exercise in feeling happy that I'm no longer there.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a weird bubble. I mean, everywhere is different. The South is not a monolith, as Anthony Bourdain has once said. Mm. But it is, there are similarities, and it's very, I don't know. There's this groupthink that happens that's very interesting.
And I feel like that's true for a lot of these reality shows, where it's like not so much like aspirational as much as it's
like anthropological in a way. Because, I mean, I think that's what I remember when we talked to Sally Ann Salzano, the Jersey Shore creator.
Yes.
She was saying that,
I was
like,
not there.
It is very anthropological. She looks for groups of people. Like, that's what makes a good reality show. Like, a group of people whose lifestyle is not what other people would normally see. And then sort of train your lens on that, and you're sort of working with the stereotypes a little bit, but then also trying to work against them. And it's just like, that's how, I mean, all of these shows are like finding, like Below Deck focuses on like yachties.
I feel like there's this idea of the South on this show that is constantly being performed.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That's the notion I got as well.
That's what it feels like a Tennessee Williams play.
Yeah. They go to these, like, balls that are not real. Like, I don't know. I don't buy it. It's kind of, like, they're real, but, like, I feel like 24-year-olds in Charleston are not going to mask balls. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. Prove me wrong. It's
far from your reality.
It's far from my, yes, exactly, Mitty.
On Oops the Podcast, join me, comedian Giulio Gallerati, as I examine everyday life, the mistakes, the bad decisions, the goals, the jokes, the social engagements, and all things in between. I'm joined every week by producer and personal confidant Ryan Lynch, various other comedians, for witty, candid, and intoxicating conversation. Our listeners love Oops for sophisticated banter, aka your mom could listen, and many feel like they're in the room with us chopping it up with old pals. You can find every episode of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.
We are very fortunate to be sitting here with someone who actually knows the ins and outs of being a Bravo celebrity. We have Angela Pham from Gallery Girls. Also, she looks amazing, I'll say.
Yeah.
That's true.
Thank you.
Very summery.
Thank you. It is very summery, my dress. But I'm really excited to be here. It's fun revisiting my shame.
Every Monday by Bravo.
New York is the kind of place where everyone's just fighting to survive.
The art world is super cutthroat.
You really have to stick out if you want to get to the top.
So we're going to go back in time.
Okay.
We're going back. You being approached to be on this show, how did that happen?
My friend Chantal, I think, responded to a Craigslist ad. And then she she kind of roped us all in. And initially, I didn't understand because I had nothing to do with the art world, the way it was posed. But yeah, they kind of whittled down the cast and they like submitted a sizzle reel and then they chose me. And I was just shocked. Like, I don't know how I made it on.
It's very funny that you said, like, you, like, weren't a part of that world even.
No.
And then it was just like, no.
You do. It was totally inorganic. Yeah, I don't really understand. Because I was a photographer, and maybe that was, like, the only kind of, like, tenuous tie to the art world is that I was a creative.
But you and Chantal were actually friends going into this. And
yeah, Chantal and I were good friends. We worked in retail together, like, in college. And we knew Claudia, too.
Yeah, so that at least it was like you guys
that
knew
was
each
the
other.
Real part. Yeah,
right. We're all so the real friendship friends. Was like
yeah, and we're still really, really good friends.
Well, that's good.
That's great. I mean, yeah, you like went through this traumatic experience together. Yeah, you're bonded for life.
We never mention it, but
your gallery girl tattoos don't really show that often.
Oh boy! But then, so you agreed, and it happened. So Gallery Girls sort of aired before Bravo sort of hit. Where it is right now, like its peak. Mm-hmm.
It was a part of its like first swell of reality shows, sort of.
There's something about Gallery Girls that felt very experimental and like early Bravo. I don't know. It was sort of cobbled together. Nobody really knew why, like each person was on the show. Everybody was sort of
kind of thrown
running
in
around.
Maybe that's why it didn't get a season two.
I still enjoyed it.
Do you feel like you benefited from going into this, like not really knowing the reality TV business, or was that sort of a hindrance in a way? Like,
I think my hindrance was knowing too much about reality TV, okay. Only because I had been kind of obsessively watching Real Housewives of Orange County, and I'm from Orange County ever since I was in high school. So it kind of dictated how I wanted to present myself and how to act on camera. Whereas my friends, like Chantal and Claudia, obviously didn't watch that those sort of shows or like engage in with pop culture. So I think that was kind of good for them because they could act a little bit more authentically. And I feel like I was always kind of hamming it up in a way that I thought a Bravo audience would want to see.
That's
so, you know, I was always trying to get naked, trying to go wild. I wanted to be a Tamra. Like,
oh my God.
I was
going to
ask like who your role model would be.
Was the Lambda thing, the look at me device, was that like a real thing that you believed or did you sort of bring that out for the show?
That was created for the show.
Oh my God.
Little Lambda acronym. I was dating a writer at the time and we would just sit around and just like shoot the shit about what is like the most ridiculous thing I could say on a camera.
Oh my God.
So like at my art show, we were like, I was discussing my artwork like in a self-serious manner and being like, my artwork is all about like being on the precipice of moroseness or something like that. And he coined the phrase and I took it.
Teetering on the precipice of moroseness, I remember that. It was so funny.
But it's also so fascinating, like the level of self-awareness to like be like, all right, I'm going to kind of ideally like have fun with this and like create a character.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Then you kind of have to live with that character.
Totally, yeah. And like people who watch don't know that that was like a self-conscious move.
Yeah, of course.
But no, it was like hours of me just like making fun of myself and having fun with it. Yeah, and that was kind of my approach too. I really wanted to just it to be a fun memory and an experience in my life.
Yeah, is it?
I really don't have any regrets. I think that the pace in which like New York City moves, I think people forget things pretty easily. And I'm kind of probably in like my fourth iteration of who Angela Pham is. So I think New York is very forgiving in that you could have fun and then people forget. Hopefully, I don't know. Maybe I'm just telling myself that.
No, I think that's true.
Yeah.
I don't know. And like you're like a working photographer. You have a job. You're not,
Yeah. I have a
trying to
I
be
have a real job.
Right. Yeah, you didn't like
keep telling myself that.
Yeah, well, you didn't try to parlay this into like
handbags
or like whatever.
Empowerment speeches.
Like you didn't try to continue to stay on like the reality TV.
I mean, I'm on my podcast media tour right now.
You are. Yeah, and I mean, thank you so. We're so honored.
This is where it's going
to
start.
I don't even
again.
Know what I have to promote on this show right now. Besides my photography business.
That's, that's an excellent thing to promote.
I mean, that
promote.
Seems like, again, like a good thing.
Like a good thing.
Do you feel like any part of it was an accurate portrayal of the art world, or was it all sort of theatrical? And was it all sort of, I don't
like
know. Does any of it, like, ring as reality to you?
I feel like it was not an accurate representation of what the art world really is. Not like I'm actually in the art world, but No, I mean, all the scenes, you know, are fabricated. But I do feel like how we were portrayed as people is kind of just like an exaggeration of who we really are.
Right.
So I was this crazy, like, fashionista, boy crazy artist. And, like, I am that person, but not that extreme.
Right. You're just pushing it to, like, be totally. Your most entertaining self.
Yeah, exactly.
What about, like, the Manhattan-Brooklyn divide?
Yeah, there did seem to be, like, a very real tension between the blondes and the brunettes on the show. Like, there were these, like, and it sort of reflects something that's real in the city, which is, like, the people that live in Murray Hill or whatever and wear boat shoes, and the people that are, like, a little weirder.
Live in Bushwick and...
Right. I don't know. What did that feel like from the inside? Did you feel like that was played up?
I mean, it's such a simplistic sort of divide, right?
Yeah.
And like, right. Such an easy way to, like, pit two groups of girls together. Mm-hmm. But in truth, I did not like those uptown girls. Like, yeah. Even though I live in Manhattan now, I still think of myself as the Williamsburg hipster girl, even though that's not what Williamsburg is anymore.
As someone who lives a block away from the Whole Foods, it is not.
Oh, yeah, you live on Bedford.
I've lived there for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And it's changed like completely since I've lived
there.
I
mean, even when I moved in, it was just a long time ago. But
the whole thing.
No, I still consider myself like a little bit of a renegade, and I'll never be part of like the blonde crew, and I never was. So, it was a funny, interesting story arc, but yeah.
I was rewatching a clip where you tell one of the blonde girls that she looks like she's from Orange County, and she's like, I am.
Wait, I was just watching that clip also.
Yeah.
You look California. Orange County?
I lived there for like 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
You look like it. You look like an OC girl.
I miss it so much. I know.
Orange County doesn't have the best reputation for diversity or culture or anything interesting.
Yep.
I left Orange County because me and my friends were considered freaks and weirdos. One of the last things that I kind of want to do is surround myself by the types of girls that made me want to leave in the first place.
Well, I just wanted to say hi. It was nice to meet you.
And we've delved into something very odd here.
Yeah.
You look like you're from Orange County. I lived in Orange County.
I know. You look like one.
It was my attempt to, like, throw shade. It was not that funny. But
I actually love
Orange County. I'm sorry I made fun of Orange County because I love it. Secretly love it.
It was actually that little part was sort of interesting in that it surprised me in that a lot of these Bravo shows, like, don't really talk about race in such an explicit way. And, like, you bring it up right away. Like, in, like, a very, like a surprising in a good way. Type mm-hmm. of thing where you're just like, yeah, like, I don't know. Those, like, remind me of, like, the girls I went to high school with who were all blonde and all white and all this and all that. And it's right. just, like, it was just really kind of refreshing to just hear it sort of labeled that way when that's kind of how all of those shows are.
Right.
And I think a lot of the people that moved to New York kind of have that mentality of, like, I want to get away from the people I went to high school with.
Right.
And, like, I'm annoyed when I have to hang out with people like that in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
why
we hang out at Boutique.
Yeah. What is Chantal up to?
Chantal is everyone's favorite character.
She had like this weird scene that I'll never forget, and I don't know why, where she was just talking about her French press coffee. I don't know.
She's like, as pretentious as she is on the show, but in a lovable way.
Yeah,
sure.
I think she's going to be summering in the Loire Valley.
That sounds
in
nice.
All of August with her fiance
congrats
on like a natural wine vineyard.
Oh my God.
Like, her life is just, it's so fake to me, but no, I mean, like, she's a real person, like, but like,
right.
The stuff that comes out of her mouth is so funny, but I love her.
What happened when End of Century closed? Like, what do they do? What do Claudia and Chantal do now?
I think Claudia moved upstate. I don't really talk to Claudia. I also live upstate now, partially.
Oh, cool. Oh, nice.
And Chantal moved to Los Angeles and started, like, a creative agency, and they represent photographers.
I was looking at a sort of, like, where are they now thing for research, and the thing for Claudia was that we don't really know where she is, but she recently was selling a couch on apartment therapy.
Wow, they did deep.
So
that's
like, it was like she's either moving or renovating. Which I'm like, that is like, that is such
She's into florals. She's one of those girls.
Like, couldn't they just be male?
Okay, I get
like,
what you're saying.
Flower arranging.
I get what you're saying, yes.
You know the type.
I know exactly the type, yes.
Yeah.
If you were approached to do a reality show now, would you consider it?
Or what would it be about?
It's just like the Angela Pham show.
Yeah. It's but. Like out of all the cast, they were like, we want Angela's story. Would you agree?
If they paid more than Gallery Girls, then yes. So if they pay. Yeah.
That's what's always so crazy to me.
That's what it boils down to, isn't
yeah.
it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of course I would do it.
Duh, yeah. Money's money.
Need to maintain my upstate lifestyle.
That's yeah. right.
You want to go to the Loire Valley sometime.
Exactly. My boyfriend's not going to pay. I've got to pay for my own way.
Well, you're going to have to dump him for the show.
Step
on camera.
I actually had a boyfriend throughout the whole filming of Gallery Girls. And it's funny because my whole story was about like finding a boyfriend, but...
Wow, yeah, you were just
one.
Like, you're like, yeah, no.
I wanted a second one.
Fair enough. You wanted a TV boyfriend.
Yeah. Exactly.
What did your boyfriend think of the show? Like, when you were filming it, like, what was his general reaction to?
He was like, just always shaking his head, yeah. like, in like shame and like embarrassment.
Oh, God.
But also, we were laughing at it. Okay. So it was okay. funny.
Good. Yeah. That's good.
The like salary thing has always really fascinated me because it's like, I know. Like, Vanderpump Rules is one of the most successful TV shows on Bravo, and those guys get paid next to nothing.
Yeah.
They told you how much they get paid?
Well, it's like, I think it's public. It's like, basically, they make, like, $4,000 an episode or something.
That's
so generous.
I read something where it's, like, most of them make $10,000. Jax makes, like, $20,000 an episode.
I think this was a couple of years ago, because I remember one of
inflation,
them.
Yeah.
Inflation,
one of them tried to, like, stand off with the producers. Tom Sandoval tried to be like, you need to give me more than $4,000 an
Tom
episode.
Sandoval.
And
right.
they're just like, no, you can just leave the show.
Wow, yeah.
And they called his bluff.
And he was like, never mind, I'm still doing it.
Oh, I wonder how much the Housewives get paid. I mean, with season one, you don't really have like a lot of negotiating power, right?
Right.
Like if it's a new show, like you don't know how it's going to do. So,
right.
Like I had to pay for my own photo show for, my wardrobe. There was no hair and makeup. It was very janky.
Yeah. I think you can, with those early shows, you can kind of see that in production even, where it's just sort of like, I don't know, like those shows are so cheap to make and they make them for that reason. So it's just like, they're not going to add on expenses.
Totally. Yeah.
Do you feel like being on that show has damaged your life at all? Do you feel like it's benefited it? I'm interested to hear what like the aftermath of that is.
When the show aired, I had a lot of anxiety kind of rewatching it and reliving it. So I went on vacation a lot when it aired. But now that, like, how many years has passed? 7 years? I have no regrets at all. And I didn't really have regrets at the time. But I just think life is all about, like, accruing interesting, unique experiences. And I'm, like, such a pop culture fanatic that it was so cool to go through that process. And that's why I'm here today. Like, I wanted to see what a podcast studio is. I love podcasts. So I just, my life has lost philosophy at that time was just not to say no, and still not. Like, I just
things,
love, absorbing new, crazy, dumb experiences.
That's a very healthy way of thinking.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, that's good.
That seems right.
That is, I think that is right.
You know, you can die tomorrow. Like, I want to show my kids that I was on Gallery Girls.
Yeah, be like,
maybe I don't.
Yeah, be like, don't do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cautionary tale.
What does your parents think?
I didn't let them watch it, but I think they watched it anyway. We're an Asian family, so we just don't discuss those things.
I understand.
We just never bring it up.
I understand. Yeah.
Did you notice people changing for the camera when people were filming versus when they weren't? Or I guess this is just for the people that you were friends with before. Did you feel like you guys were kind of performing with each other, or did it just feel authentic?
Oh, no, you feel totally stiff. And like whenever a camera's on you, you know, or whenever it's like someone's taking a picture of you, you automatically change and adjust who you are. Even like in front of different groups of people, you're always constantly performing. And especially with the camera, you are very, very self-conscious.
So you did not have that thing where it's like, oh, you forget it's there.
No, absolutely not. I was hamming it up and like people were very emotional on camera. There's something that the camera does that makes you just act like an idiot.
Were there any like big fights that happened off camera because of something that happened on camera?
Nothing big or explosive, but maybe just like small resentments that kind of grow deeper and deeper.
Right.
Or, cool. Yeah.
Perfect. Those are so good. I love those.
I don't recall, so pardon, but did Gallery Girls have like confessionals Like one-on-ones.
What's that?
You know how like on The Real Housewives, it'll be like Tamara being like, I didn't know what Shannon was talking about.
Oh, yeah, we had those.
How are those, shooting those?
Those are very confusing because they always want you to like form full sentences and talk in the present tense, which is very confusing. So, yeah, it's pretty hard to recount. I love watching those on Real Housewives, like connecting there, have to talk about the scene, and it's just interesting to watch.
Would they like show you the scene before you had to talk about it to remind you what happened? Because if I have the memory of like a 90-year-old, and if I had to recount something that happened 3 months ago, I don't know what I would do.
I can hardly remember like last week. So yeah,
I know, same.
It'd be very stressful.
No, but you film those like maybe 2 days after.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. And they ask very leading questions, so, like, they basically tell you what to say. And sometimes they would tell you what to say.
Right, like, so how did you feel when XYZ, and you have to respond, like,
they,
when XYZ
did put the words in your mouth, essentially, with the questions.
Did they do your hair and makeup and wardrobe for those?
No, not even.
Damn.
That's so rude.
Yeah.
Terrifically rude, I mean.
And I didn't know how to apply makeup. So
I mean, you looked good.
You
on
looked
the show,
fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
You looked wonderful.
I guess that's like one of the benefits of being like a dewy 20-something at NPM reality TV.
Exactly.
Do you still get recognized?
Yeah. Once I was in Dunkin' Donuts, and I never go to Dunkin' Donuts, and I was like ashamedly ordering like a milkshake, and then some man was like, "Hey, aren't you Angela from Gallery Girls?" And I was like, "No," and I like ran back home, and then I got this Facebook message from this man being like, I just saw your doppelganger at Dunkin' Donuts, and she was very rude. That's so weird.
Also, like,
that's the one time I denied being Angela Pham.
That's extremely, that is extremely weird and extremely fucked up.
But once in a while I get recognized.
I would imagine you get a lot of people who are like, did we go to high school together?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that is the...
For the first 3 years after the airing, I got that a lot, but not anymore.
That's good.
And I'm out in the city a lot. Like, people could recognize me from so many different things, just from, like, shooting a party or something.
Right. You're a woman about town.
Yeah, exactly.
When you watch reality TV now, do you feel like you can see the puppet strings more clearly than before?
Yes. I think that it's, you could tell when producers are getting involved and when things seem authentic or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't watch that much reality TV anymore because since Gallagher Girls, I mean, there's been like such an explosion of great television. Sure, yeah. I remember like when Gallagher Girls was coming out, I think Girls was on HBO. And I mean, that was a good show. And anything that's come since then is just like more entertaining than reality TV for me.
Yeah,
it's a very healthy way to live.
Yeah,
honestly, no, but reality TV is fun. But
no, I know, it's good I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah,
stuff that doesn't rot your brain completely.
Stuff that makes you like think about other
think
stuff
about
rather than like why humanity is like on a like a crash course for like disaster.
But that's what every scripted show is about.
At this point, yeah.
I think like Westworld is like that.
Sure.
All of these shows are just basically
so artful.
Yeah.
That's so high budget. Yeah, that's the difference.
Call me when there's someone as interesting as Tamara on Westworld. and I'll take back everything I'm saying.
She has a point.
The bold statement. You heard it here first.
Great roles for, you know, adult women, meaty roles.
Cool, sure.
Yeah, I barely watch any scripted TV.
I mean, there's just so much reality TV that who has the time? I feel like it is bad, though, because I do feel like I spend so much time watching shows that actively work to make me less smart. But they're so enjoyable.
I think I heard you guys mentioning, like, you love reality TV because everyone's such a mess, right? And there's that element of schadenfreude where, I love my life.
Yeah, like, I'm great.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Okay, Angela, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
This has been so nice.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch.
We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the Real Brady Bros.
So this has been a mostly fun and sort of trivial episode about, you know, something silly that we all get really into. But we would be remiss not to mention the deaths of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain this past week. Two major losses. I know Anthony Bourdain at least has, like, meant a lot to me and, like, what I've learned about food. And he's made me think about food. And not just me. I think he's made a lot of people think about food in a way that's more global and more dynamic than just what we put into our bodies. And it's just, it's really, really sad, and not to be saccharine or trite, but if feelings of depression are getting overwhelming for you, just know that there are people who love you and would miss you if you weren't here. So we're going to drop in the number of the suicide hotline. Never be afraid to call it. It's 1-800-273-TALK, which is 8255. We love you as our listeners, and we know that there are people who love you even more than that.
Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast, and thank you to Ellie Sheckett and Angela Pham. Our show is produced by Levi Sharp. Majano Mofidi is our executive director of audio. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. This episode was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. Our intern is Rachel Withers. If you want to send us a tip or just let us know what you think, hit us up at dirtcast@jezebel.com. You can find us on Spotify, NPR One, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.